Good afternoon and welcome to DWC's quarterly meeting. As always, we are happy to have y'all with us and to give you an update on what's happening here at the division. These meetings are intended to be an informal and encouraging open communication between our staff and our system participants. So please, we welcome your feedback and we will do our best to answer any questions that y'all have. But we do ask that we keep questions to the end. And then we'll be sure to try and help answer any questions in the chat function as well. Couple typical meeting reminders. Please stay muted during the presentation so that everyone can hear our speakers. And then after the meeting, if you have any feedback or additional questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to our external relations team. You can contact me directly or you can shoot us a message on our general email box. And now I will turn it over to Commissioner Nelson to get us started.
Thanks, Kate. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being with us today. Like Kate said, this is a really busy time of year for us at the division. It's session, working on our budget, a lot of bills coming through. We have hearings. We get a lot of data requests from the legislature, all sorts of information requests. So we usually have this meeting go for about an hour and a half. We're going to try to keep it to under an hour today. I did just want to kind of briefly touch on a few quick things. I'll be a little briefer than normal today. The first is a few things for some of our doctors. We are currently working for our designated doctors on a DD report template, just putting together sort of an outline of a report to help our doctors kind of know what information they're required to provide to us when they're doing an exam, to kind of bring some consistency to that process, to make it easier for them, make it easier for our system participants who are reviewing those reports. It's not going to be required. It's just going to be a tool that's available to our designated doctors, but we hope a lot of you will take advantage of it because we do think it will give you a better sense of what we're looking for and how, it should be laid out. We do have that template almost complete. We are also, along with that, working on a video that's going to go along with it to help doctors explain or to help explain to doctors sort of how to use it, how to fill it out, and some useful tips to those reports. The other thing for our doctors in our system I wanted to mention is our ongoing study of the AMA guides from the move to the fourth to the sixth edition. Mary's going to talk about that a little bit later, but we are still working on it. We are hoping to get a report out later this year. We seem to be on track to do that. And from there, the next step will be evaluating what, if anything, needs to change if we do make that change from the fourth to the sixth edition of the AMA guides. We also, right now, I'm not sure how many of the people on this call this applies to, but it is filing season for non-subscribers. The labor code does require all employers who don't have workers' comp coverage to file that information with us. This year, for the first time, we do have a much easier process to do that online. I believe it's also mobile friendly. So that's out there and available to anyone who needs to file that information. It's on our website. We're also happy to send that link to you if anyone needs it. One other small thing I wanted to note before I go over a few things on rules is we have been working. Several months ago, we had some attorneys at some place I was speaking at the state bar mentioned that they would like access to Wi-Fi in our field offices to help them pull up files when they're conducting contested case hearings to better access the records when they're needed, when they're holding a hearing. We are working on that project right now. We're hopeful it'll be up and running in all the field offices soon. One thing to note with that is the intent is really for this to be for attorneys and OIC and whoever else during a hearing. It really isn't supposed to be so people can sit in the parking lot or they can sit in the waiting room and take benefit review conferences or other meetings in there. So there's going to be a process that we put out about how to get access to that Wi-Fi, where to get the password, when it's going to change. But hopefully expect more information from us on that soon. I did just briefly want to touch on a few rule things. We usually try to keep rules down, or we try not to put any new rules out during session. That's something that's kind of a guideline for us, not a hard and fast rule. I do think we may be having to put out one, potentially two rules out sometime in the next few weeks. I don't think they're going to be anything too significant, but please be on the lookout for those. We are going to try to do all our rule or the majority of our rules informally now. That's something that we had gotten away from a little bit just because of some time constraints with some of the projects we've been working on. But our goal is for the majority of our rules to put out
Yeah, here's the thing.
an informal rule project, rule draft first, so we can collect some stakeholder feedback, so we can collect some input, and we can make some changes based on that feedback for the formal proposal. So, I know we usually try to keep that down, but I do just want to give you a heads up. In the next few weeks, you might be seeing one or two from us, but the volume shouldn't be too high, and I don't think it's going to be anything too contentious. And with that, I'll save a few things for the end. But with that, I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. So good afternoon and welcome to our second combined quarterly meeting. My name is Mary Landrum. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Health and Safety. And today, Amy and I are going to provide you with the health and safety update. So I'd like to start with a designated doctor program update. So it has been 2 years since we adopted the first set of designated doctor rules, which at the time it was with the goal to maintain and increase participation in the designated doctor program. At the time of the 2023 adoption, the designated doctor list was at its all-time low of 236 designated doctors with about 70 physicians. The second set of DD rules, which was increasing the reimbursement while simplifying billing processes, those rules were adopted last year. So both of these rule projects have allowed us to market the program successfully, increasing participation to 339 designated doctors, including 88 physicians. And that's the number at the end of February. So as participation has increased, we continue to monitor compliance in the DD program, specifically the quality of designated doctor reports. Dr. Wasserberger, our designated doctor education advisor, has done an extraordinary job along with the DD faculty. And some of the ways I'd like to give you some examples of the work that they have done. So they have provided training and resources to help designated doctors perform this important work. They're also providing timely feedback to new doctors on the first three exams conducted. They're offering designated doctors opportunities to speak with designated doctor faculty about the feedback that they receive. And as Commissioner Nelson mentioned earlier, Dr. Wasserberger and the team is currently working on a video that we can put out to really walk designated doctors through what are the requirements that must be included in a designated doctor report. Also, making sure that we cover best practices for putting forth a good designated doctor DD narrative report. And we have created a template. And again, as Commissioner mentioned, the template itself will not be required necessarily, but we're hoping that this tool is just another tool in the toolbox for designated doctors to use. What we're hoping to do after that video is put forth is also to create a webinar that is more engaging to work with designated doctors and really talk to them more in detail as to focusing on report writing, if you will. So more to come on that. Aside from the work that Dr. Wasserberger has done and continues to do, the Office of the Medical Advisor is in the midst of developing a designated doctor plan-based audit. This audit will focus on reviewing designated doctor reports that include additional testing. Just looking at the medical necessity, the appropriateness of that additional testing, and was that really necessary for the designated doctor to order in order to answer the questions that the designated doctor was asked to address. And then lastly, the Research and Evaluation Group will be conducting an analysis on designated doctors and scheduling companies that perform this type of work in our system by evaluating the performance of designated doctors and scheduling companies using metrics such as rescheduled exams, timeliness of reports and timeliness of payments. So that is something that the Office of the Medical Advisor and other folks within health and safety will partner with the reg to get that study or that analysis moving. So switching gears just a little bit, I do want to take this time to remind you about the importance of submitting DWC 32 requests that are complete and accurate. And in part, the reason that I want to mention this here is because the majority of the 32 requests that are submitted do come in from insurance carriers. And so we want to just make sure that you do a good job in submitting those requests. And again, that they're complete and accurate, because not doing so leads to delays and confusion in scheduling DD appointments. That we do have a video that's out there. It's a quick 5-minute video on how to complete a 32 that is posted on our designated doctor homepage, but I believe staff should be posting a link to that video. So you take just a few minutes out of your day today and hopefully watch that, and please share that with folks in your organization. And before I turn it over to Amy, the last update is in reference to the AMA guide study. So I know that we have been talking about this study for about a year. And so, and some of you probably have heard this already, but just so you know, the delay in starting the study was in anticipation of the AMA publishing their substantive changes to the musculoskeletal chapters, which occurred in September of 2024, but with an effective date of December 1st, 2024. Then, at the beginning of this year, the AMA announced additional non-substantive edits that we had to look at and review before we began the study on our end. So, the study, and I think I mentioned this in the past, will be completed in two phases. The first phase is comprised of a review of cases by medical quality review panel members. With the help of the REG, the Research and Evaluation Group, we have identified 377 cases that were selected from exams conducted in 2023, which have become final or became final in our system. So these MQRP members that are reviewing the cases are, in essence, taking those cases that were already rated under the fourth, and they're simply using that information to rate the cases under the sixth edition 2024 version. Okay. Upon completing the review of those cases, all that information is going to be provided to the REG. And that will initiate the second phase of the study, in which the REG will use the findings from the MQRP members to, again, evaluate the feasibility and impact of adopting a more current version of the AMA guides. And as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, the goal is for us to complete both phases of this study by the end of this year. So that's all I have as far as updates for the health and safety side. And now, Amy, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Mary. As y'all know, Amy Rich here. I work in the Healthcare Provider Outreach Program area. I'm here to give you an update on a few initiatives we've been working on. For the first initiative, Rule 133.30, the telemedicine, telehealth, teledentistry services has been amended. Both the formal proposal and the adoption orders with the rule language, they're all out on our website for you to read through right now under R for Rules, and then Rules in Progress, and then 2025. We proposed the rule amendments in December 24 and formally adopted in February of this year. The amendments become effective for dates of service on or after June 1st this year. Although telemedicine exams have been allowed in our system for some time now, the workers' compensation specific exams of MMI and impairment rating were not allowed via telemedicine. However, going forward, impairment rating exams are still not allowed via telemedicine. However, the rule now will allow a treating doctor to conduct an MMI evaluation, that is the 99455 V3 through 5, via telemedicine with a couple of conditions. One is that the injured employee must agree to it, and the other is that the treating doctor must have seen them at least once before that MMI certification exam. Also, know that only a doctor by the labor code definition can perform an MMI examination, whether it be in person or telemedicine. As a reminder, a treating doctor does not have to be a certifying doctor, that means trained and tested, to conduct an MMI exam where there is no possibility of impairment. Because the CPT code for treating doctor MMI exam, that's 99455, as I mentioned earlier, is not on the list of the CMS allowed telehealth services, but it's allowed by a modification by our rule. I just wanted to give you, the carriers, a heads up that you need to adjust your edits on incoming bills to include 99455 on the list of telehealth allowable services in the workers' compensation system beginning June 1st, 2025. Next slide. Just to be clear, the rule amendments do not change the fact that impairment rating exams are still, they're not allowed by telemedicine. These must be done in person by a doctor that is certified. If you'd like to know more, we're conducting training on May 15th and 20th. These are repeat sessions. The registration links are now up on our calendar of events. Next slide. The next update I'd like to review is the exam fees table on the DWC website. This is the table that provides exam fee amounts for those workers' compensation specific exams like MMI, IR, extent of injury, and the like. The exam table's been up on our webpage since the change in the MMI IR fee guidelines back in June of last year. Now, as we've worked through a couple of trainings on this information, we've continued to improve this table for our system participants. It's been updated again as of early March and now includes all workers' compensation specific exam and the like that are subject to the Medicare Economic Index adjustment each year. So we've also had some wording changes and some consistent use of abbreviations on there. So heads up, if you haven't looked at that exam fee table, it's been updated as of March. Also, for your convenience, in the past, you would have to go to C for conversion factor to find this exam fee table. We added two new topics in our A through Z, so you can find it by the topic of designated doctor exam fees or certifying doctor exam fees. And that is in our A through Z now. Next slide. Finally, the last initiative I'm going to discuss is our campaign to increase the number of treating doctors, even referral doctors, that are certifying doctors. First, it's just much easier to become certified now that the testing has been reduced to just one test and the virtual training is every 2 years and it's virtual. The reimbursement for these exams, of course, has seen an increase. Last year, a large increase. And now it's subject to the MEI, the Medicare Economic Index, annually. So that's good news. And because the treating doctor is responsible for the overall injured employee's claim and already has that doctor-patient relationship established, it just makes sense the treating doctor conducts these important milestone exams. So that's why we're encouraging more treating doctors to become certified. Our next certification training is in June of this year, and it's posted on our calendar right now, and we'll offer more throughout the year. Last slide. Here are some of the steps and strategies we've taken for this initiative. We created our own certifying doctor webpage. So if you go to C for certifying doctor, you'll see that it's separated from the designated doctor webpage. So if you're a treating doctor, you're interested in becoming certified, you have your own page to look at. So we added that to the A through Z. We updated the table. We have marketed to our certified workers' compensation healthcare networks to increase the number of certified doctors within their panel of providers. We are exhibiting at medical conferences. I'll be at Texas Orthopedic Association conference this week. I'll be at the Texas Medical Association conference, increasing the awareness of workers' comp in general and becoming certified. And then also, we're looking at those doctors that were once certified to try to encourage them to become certified again if they don't realize that it's become easier and the reimbursement has increased for impairment ratings. All right, so the next, thank you for allowing me to speak here, and I'm going to turn it over to the next speaker. Thank you.
I'm the next speaker.
Yay.
Hi, everybody.
Good afternoon. My name is Martha Levo, and I'm the Director for Enterprise Automation Services. And today I'm going to give a little information about carrier resources for monitoring EDI. And I'm also going to give a quick update about the healthcare provider PBO, which kicks off next month. Next slide. Okay, so there's several resources for carriers that they can use to monitor their third-party administrators that send in claim EDI information, and also for those that send in medical EDI information. So I quickly wanted to go through these resources, and they should be most people probably on this call, if you're a carrier, you're familiar with most of these resources, but then I want to focus in on a couple today and just explain a little more about those. Scorecards is the first resource I wanted to go over. That has been around a while. It's going to let carriers be able to go into reporting that will let them know what the percentage of timeliness of reporting of initial payments for TIBS, and also reporting for medical state reporting, and whether all of that is timely. So that's all about timeliness, and those have been around a while. The next resource, the DWIC Form 29. Now, this resource is for carriers that want to have detailed information either about claim EDI or medical EDI, maybe to dig into an issue that they think is around, or just to look at their totals of medical state reporting or claim EDI. There's a couple of different processes for those, but if you fill out the form and send it in, we can walk you through that process. Now, the Compliance Coordinator Dashboard, that is a new resource that we have put together for the claim and medical EDI compliance coordinators that were selected by the insurance carriers. So we did start publishing it last month. There were a few little hiccups with the programming, so we're still working on improving that report, and we should be able to resume sending those out to the compliance coordinator starting next month. And this is just a very high-level view of claim EDI volume. It gives you information about some of the newer reports that we implemented under 3.1. So this is going to hopefully give the compliance coordinators in your organization enough information to know, hey, this looks fine, or this looks right, or there might be a problem. That would be a signal for you all to contact either your third-party administrator responsible for reporting that information, and or the software vendor that might be helping. So again, we're going to resume those, and you'll start getting these reports again mid-March. Self-reporting. So I talk about self-reporting as a resource because it really is a coordinated effort between the person who is reporting that there might be a problem with EDI reporting and the division. So we don't simply have you report it to us and then nothing happens. We do help you understand the problems, understand how to fix them, and of course we ask for in writing how you're going to prevent that problem from happening again. So let's go to the next slide. So a little more information about self-reporting. So there's a couple of different parts of self-reporting. The initial self-report kind of makes sense. You give us a description of the issue, a number of EDI records affected that you know of, your corrective action plan, and the approximate date that that issue will be corrected. So examples of issues would be if there was an outage in your EDI production, whether it's at the TPA or at the software vendor's organization, if there was some kind of interruption to reporting. It is important for you all to report that to us because we're also looking at claim EDI and medical EDI volumes. And we might be giving you a call if you don't come in and tell us that something's going on. Second part of self-reporting is we're going to verify, if there was an interruption, and you weren't able to file EDI reports for a matter of weeks, let's just hypothetically talk about that. Then what we would expect to see is we filed these reports on this day, and we have sufficient information so that we can confirm that those reports have been received in our system. So that's what the self-report does. Just, I'm going to mention real quick that the 2025 healthcare provider PBO for healthcare providers out there, we are going to kick that off next month. And I do encourage you all to just give a little read to the 2025 healthcare provider PBO assessment plan, because that gives you the schedule that we're going to follow, sort of when you are going to get those data. The data call where we're going to request 73s from you. So you want to prepare for that, because this year there have been a few important changes, and I really encourage you to read through that and just ask questions if you have any. And that is all I have for today. Thank you so much for your attention. And if you have any questions, feel free to post them in the chat.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Matt Posey, Deputy Commissioner for Operations and External Relations here at DWC. Let's go to our first slide. First off, our annual conference will be held on September 29th and 30th at the Embassy Suites San Marcos Hotel and Conference Center. Registration will be opening soon. And for more information, visit our website or scan the QR code on this slide. I'll give you a few seconds on that. And next slide. For our legislative update, the 89th session of the Texas Legislature began on January 14th. Legislators will have until sine die on June the 2nd to move their bills through the process and get them to the governor's desk for passage into law. We have a record number of bills this year, so it'll be a heck of a time. Slide three. Major workers' compensation related topics we're seeing include first responders, scope of practice, telemedicine, exclusive remedy, the use of AI in decision making. The use of AI generally is a hot topic this year at the legislature. Pre-authorization and changes to state agency administrative and regulatory requirements. That will be in the form of the new Delivery of Government Efficiency Committee, headed by Chairman Capriglione. Next slide. DWC External and Media Relations is actively working with the legislature to ensure that Texas remains a national model in workers' compensation. We're providing regular updates to our committees of jurisdiction, which include the Senate Business and Commerce Committee and the House Trade, Workforce, and Economic Development Committee. One new addition is we do have standing select committees this year. Our standing select committee of jurisdiction is the Subcommittee on Workforce within Trade, Workforce, and Economic Development. We'll also be providing updates to the Office of the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and the Speaker of the House. Beyond that, we work as informational resources to legislators on bills in the form of resource witnesses in committee hearings. And we also provide information and feedback on legislation to individual offices in order to improve and perfect legislation as it moves through the process. We also offer workers' comp 101 trainings upon request, and deliver district spotlight newsletters to legislative offices to provide insights on workers' compensation for each legislator's district. Next slide. What to expect in the coming days? The Senate and House committees have begun holding public hearings on proposed legislation. This stage in the process allows for the public to voice their support on or opposition on bills prior to advancement to the next phase of the passage. Expect committee activity to ramp up in the next coming weeks. The Senate and House combined have filed over 8,600 bills. This is the most bills that's been filed in a single legislative session. It's actually 6% higher than any other legislative session. Should a bill get favorable consideration, it'll move to the Calendars Committee and to the House or Senate floor. As bills move forward through the process, we'll start hearing them on the floor of both chambers. The Senate has already begun floor consideration of bills, and the House is expected to begin posting calendars in the coming weeks. We can expect plenty of late nights and deliberation in the weeks leading up to sine die as legislators work to get their bill across the finish line. As far as the budget, the Senate passed SB 1, the General Appropriations Act, yesterday. SB 1, which sets the state's biennial budget, will now move to the House for further consideration. A supplemental appropriations bill, HB 500, has also been filed, which will address items not currently funded in the General Appropriations Act. And as those move through the process, we will keep everybody updated. But that is my report, and I'll move to the next deputy.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dan LeBrier, I'm the Deputy Commissioner over Compliance and Investigations. Next slide. So over here at DWC, we operate on the fiscal year, and for us, that begins in September. So we're about halfway through of our fiscal year. So we've got a pretty good idea of what's been going on in the system. We've got a pretty good idea of what we can probably expect over the next 6 months. The slide you're looking at here, this is all the complaints that we've received in workers' compensation in the last 6 months. I've included it in the event that you want to review this information, but it doesn't really tell the full story, which I'd like to get into, which is on the next slide. Okay, so here are some important differences from where we are right now, as opposed to where we were at this time last year. Medical benefit complaints against carriers are down 54%, which I consider to be a gigantic win. Medical benefit complaints against healthcare providers are down 18%, another huge win there. One thing to kind of look out for here, communications complaints against healthcare providers are up 71%. Our figures are still under 100 in this category, so that percentage doesn't necessarily tell the entire story, but it is something to keep in mind if you are a healthcare provider. This is going to include like report filing deadlines, if you're a treating doctor, getting your injured employees' medical records over to the designated doctor. It's the paperwork violations. I know nobody goes into healthcare in order to push paperwork, but it is a big part of the job. And some targeted efforts in this area would probably pay dividends later on down the road. The flip side of that is quality of care complaints against healthcare providers are down 29%, which is something to be very proud of if you are a healthcare provider. Indemnity benefit complaints against carriers are up 7%. Not a dramatic shift there, not a huge spike or anything, but it is something that we're going to be keeping an eye on over the next 6 months. And the overall story here, the general victory that I think we can all claim is complaints are down 3.5% overall. So great work, everybody. This is all a product of y'all refining your systems, making sure that everything's handled in the way that it's supposed to be. And keep up the great work there. Next slide. As always, we are in the middle of conducting our compliance audits. First half of the year, we really leaned heavily into our death benefit and lifetime income benefit audits. The results of those audits have been less than stellar. Seen a lot of problems with getting a complete wage statement, getting an accurate wage statement. Seeing problems with calculating average weekly wage, seeing issues with carriers not adding the 3% increase on lifetime income benefits across the years. The big takeaway lesson so far from these audits has been a little more work at the front end is going to save you a lot of headache later on down the road. Make sure your calculations at the outset of these death benefit claims are correct. That way, those errors don't persist throughout the years and throughout the lifetime of the claim. And I think that will resolve a significant portion of a lot of the problems that we're seeing. As for our other two areas that we're looking into this year, TIBS and medical bill processing, we're about 70% of the way through medical bill processing. Nothing extraordinary there, nothing really standing out in the data. And then the rest of this year, we're going to be leaning pretty heavily into our TIBS audits. Which, from our perspective, TIBS benefits or TIBS are kind of the heart and soul of the comp system, at least from our perspective and what we do. Next slide. All right, here's a little glimpse at what the enforcement unit has been doing. To date, we've closed about 292 cases, and we have 177 cases still pending. Next slide. And of those 177 cases that we have pending, 153 are with insurance carriers, 21 are with healthcare providers, and 3 fall into that other category. That's literally just everybody else, every other system participant. Nothing really in this data that stands out or is out of the norm compared to other years. This is a pretty much expected for what we've seen in the past few years or so. Next slide. Same story here. The distribution of closed cases with regards to system participant. Nothing extraordinary here either. We've closed 209 cases against insurance carriers, 70 against healthcare providers, and 13 in that other category. This distribution of cases is intuitive given the number of complaints that we have. and the complaints that we're receiving as far as subject matter. Next slide. All right. This slide's detailing how we've closed out those cases. By and large, the way that we resolve these matters is through a consent order, which, for those of you who've never heard of a consent order, it's just a settlement agreement between the parties, nothing more. And then the second most often used means of closing these types of cases is going to be through a warning letter. And then in that other category, that could be a number of different ways of closing, whether we just close it on our own volition, if we can't corroborate a violation or if new evidence comes to light, something like that. But again, nothing significantly different from last year as far as how we're closing our cases. Next slide. Y'all heard me say it before. Y'all heard a number of different people say it before. All of our enforcement orders are on the internet. You can go to the TDI webpage, click on the Workers' Compensation tab, and you can search through, I believe it's like 1,250 of the most recent consent orders that we've entered into. Now, that 1,250 reaches back to 2019. So some of these are a little bit older, but with the new search function, you can do a keyword search and you can really get more detailed and more targeted in what data that is the subject of your curiosity, what you're actually wanting to look into, which is a great feature. Next slide. All right, wrapping things up here. I've got three administrative violations to keep an eye out on. Two of these are not very common, and one of these is very common, although all three of these are pretty preventable. First up is burial benefits. This mostly applies to insurance carriers. If you do get a claim for burial benefits, the turnaround on these is very, very, very fast. It's 7 days from the time that you receive it, which is a little bit of a tight turnaround compared to some other timelines in workers' compensation. So it's worth keeping in mind, that request with the receipts might sit on so-and-so's desk for a couple of days and then make it to somebody else's desk. And by the time that the right eyes are on it, 7 days has already gone by. So keep that in mind. And the people who are actually out of pocket for expenses on burial benefits or burial expenses, they have a year from the date of death of the injured employee to bring that claim. Moving on, undue influence. Be aware of what you can and cannot send to a designated doctor who's performing an exam of an injured employee. The rule's pretty clear about what can go over there. Don't see this as an opportunity to try to impeach the credibility of the injured employee. There is a venue for that. There's a time and place for that if that's your approach in the case. Trying to sneak that stuff into an analysis that you're sending over to a designated doctor is inappropriate. So be mindful of what you can and can't send, and certainly don't send criminal histories, indictments, things of that nature. It's not going to be looked upon favorably over here. And as far as our last category here, interest, if you get into a situation where you are starting to accrue interest on a benefit or some sort of a payment, understand that, let's call it, the principal amount and the interest are due in a lump sum. We see this violation very commonly. A lot of times, a carrier will realize that they owe benefits and they're a little bit late, and they'll pay the benefit amount. And then weeks later, even months later, they'll follow up with the interest amount. Just avoid the headache. Avoid possibly incurring two violations. Just get it all paid in one lump sum. And finally, if you're a healthcare provider and you receive a refund request from an insurance carrier, know that you've got 45 days to act on that. And if you get to day 60, you're going to start accruing interest on the amount. Next slide, Dylan. That's going to wrap it up. I believe we're going to open up the floor for questions, and then we'll turn it over to Commissioner Nelson for his final thoughts.
All
Any
right.
questions? Nope. All right.
All right. Well, I told you guys we were going to try to be brief on this call, since it is such a busy time for everyone. I did just want to touch base on a few things that were mentioned throughout this. First, you just heard from Dan. He did mention the death benefits audits and the lifetime income benefits audit that's that we do all the time. Those continue to be a problem. As you said, we're continuing to see underpayments to beneficiaries and injured employees receiving lifetime income benefits. And that's a big problem. These are the most important benefits in our system for the most serious injuries and fatalities in our system. And we take it really seriously that these get paid accurately and timely. And we do hear a lot that they're, carriers are not getting the information they need from their policyholders, from the businesses, from the employers. We understand that to a point, but you don't have a lot of these claims. Hopefully, you don't have a lot of these claims. You all need to be taking them seriously. You need to be taking the extra steps to go get that information so you can calculate the average weekly wage correctly. Because we're going to keep doing this audit, we're going to keep looking at these claims. And I'm not trying to be overly tough on it, but I read somewhere recently, I forget exactly where, but someone was saying, we have no idea what the division's doing with these death benefit consent orders and enforcement actions. They can pick any number they want. Well, for the past, since I've been here, it's been a dollar for dollar penalty. So whatever your underpayment amount is, that's generally what we are going to come out with for the penalty amount. Now, we do try to find mitigation. Sometimes we do try to work with you all, but it seems that a lot of insurance carriers are just okay with paying these. We've begun offering if insurance carriers will self-audit their claims for a few years and provide us some information on that, that can be a mitigating factor. To date, no one's really taken us up on that. So it kind of seems like this is the cost of doing business in the system. And I guess it will continue to be, but we really are hoping that we can start seeing some better results out of these death benefit audits that we're doing. A few other things. Mary mentioned a few things we're working on DDs to kind of look into how they're operating. Over the past few years, we did a lot of work with increasing reimbursement rates for designated doctors to reducing some testing requirements, some other administrative burdens. With that comes, some greater expectations. So that's why we have a focus on how DDs are operated in our system this year. She mentioned the report that the research and evaluation group is going to be doing, looking at several things, including designated doctors rescheduling of appointments. That's one thing that really slows down disputes in our system, and it really can impact what benefits an injured employee is or isn't getting. We have claims that or exams that get rescheduled 3, 4, 5 times, and that could push out these exams hundreds of days. So we're taking a look at that. We're also looking through the plan-based audit that she mentioned at the appropriateness of additional testing. We did raise the reimbursement rates, so rates are pretty good right now for designated doctors for the exams that they're doing. And we do want to make sure that any additional testing they are ordering is necessary. We have an obligation to keep costs at a reasonable level in our system, and that's one thing that we're going to be looking at. That's going to be a little ways down the line, but it is a focus of ours, something that we may have been seeing some things, and that's one of the reasons why we're taking a look at that this year. Few other sort of happier notes here. Matt did mention our conference. Our conference is going to be in person this year, as he said. It's going to be September 29th and 30th in San Marcos. We hope all of you will be able to join us. Registration is opening hopefully sometime in April. That's our plan right now, but be on the lookout for that. Of course, we'll be sending out information about it. We'll be marketing it pretty good. This will be a good opportunity to get everyone together to see some old faces. It's in a great location. Parking's going to be free there. So we're hoping that a lot of you will sign up for that. This year, we are also, or Kitchen, Texas is hosting an event that evening in the hotel. That event is, it's a get together, but it's also it's a concert with one of the past winners of The Voice. His name's Sundance. He's a country singer. It should be a really good time. Tickets will be inexpensive for that, and it's a good opportunity for us to raise funds for the Kids Chance organization. And for those of you that don't know, this is an organization that provides scholarships for children in Texas whose parents have either died or had a very serious injury while on the job. And they do a lot of good work. They've provided hundreds of scholarships over the years. And this is a good opportunity for them to raise a little bit of money to continue that effort. Last thing I wanted to mention is that our next meeting this summer is going to be another hybrid meeting. It's going to be here in our Austin office at the Barbara Jordan Building across from the Capitol. We hope more of you will be able to attend in person this year so we can see you then. But be on the lookout for more information on that. And with that, we're ending a little early, and we're happy to open up to any questions that you all have. So now's your chance. Okay. All right. Well, appreciate everyone's time this afternoon, and have a nice evening.